Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for telling your friends about it. Thanks for subscribing on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And you know what? If you have a few spare seconds in your busy days, you could do me a huge favor by leaving a review on iTunes. And that would help other people find the show. It'd help me move up in the rankings, and I'd really appreciate it. My guest today is Tamara Hill. I just got done talking with her, and wow, we had an awesome conversation. Tamara is a journalist here in Beijing, China, and she lives quite the life. She travels all around the world, both for work and for pleasure. She has covered a lot of very important stories in the last few years in the Asia region. And she gave me a lot of great ideas about places I could go for my next trip. We touched on a large variety of subjects, and our conversation went pretty long, so I'm going to keep this introduction short, and let's just welcome Tamara Hill. What do you do here, Tamara?
Okay, so I'm a Spanish correspondent here. I'm a multimedia journalist working for EFE, which is the Spanish leading news agency in the world. So yeah, that's pretty much what I do.
They cover all Spanish-speaking countries?
Yeah, they do. I mean, all countries. Actually, they cover all countries. We have a bureau in every country in the world. Uh-huh. So we do our stories for the Spanish-speaking countries. I mean, Spanish-speaking media, of
yeah,
course.
So you'd have, like, media in Chicago and New York and stuff like that, too?
We do, because, as you all know, I mean, I mean, a big portion of the population in the U.S. are Spanish-speaking people. So you have many media there who work in Spanish. So we also, you know, give them, you know, send our news to them. So we have clients in the U.S., in Latin America, in Spain, and we have also clients here in China.
Yeah, oh, you do?
Actually, yeah, because some Chinese media, they have a Spanish branch. So yeah, we also sell our news to them.
Well, it's one of the biggest languages in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
I mean, what, Chinese is first, by far. I mean, if you just look at native speakers, Chinese, I think Spanish is number two. If I'm not mistaken.
And I think Chinese is the first, of course.
Yes,
but,
yes.
I mean, nobody counted, but
nothing else comes close.
So, no, but I think, I mean, the second might be English, right? And then the third, Spanish.
It might be, depending on how you count it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
sure,
I think if you just count people who know a little bit of a language, it's English for sure. But native language, it'd be Chinese.
But sure, I mean, Spanish is a very important language.
Very much. I mean, being an American is, like, really important for us, too. And that, by far, that was the most popular language to study when, like, in school. Just
you hear a lot of Spanish, right, living there?
Depends on where.
Okay.
If you're in a bigger city, probably yes. Uh-huh. There's a huge Hispanic population in many parts of the country. But then other parts, just no, not at all. And actually, when I was growing up, I'm from, like, this little town in Wisconsin. And there were no non-white people, basically. I mean, it was very not diverse at all. And the only people you'd hear speaking a foreign language were the exchange students.
It
was very, it was weird just to hear another language. So,
because I remember when I was in New York, I traveled there like so many time ago. I don't know, 10 years? I don't know. But I tried to speak in English to the people, but then they speak to me in Spanish. So I was angry at them. Like, come on, I want to practice, you know?
All right.
But everyone speaks Spanish there. So yeah, it was crazy.
Right. There's all these statistics. Like in New York, I think there's more Spanish speakers than there are in like Puerto Rico.
Wow.
Like, or no, there's more Puerto Ricans. That's what it is. Okay. There's more Puerto Ricans in New York than there are in San Juan.
Okay.
And Cuba's the same, or Miami with Cuba is the same. There's more.
That's true.
There's more Cubans in Miami than there are in Havana.
Yeah.
I mean, things like this. Huge population.
Yeah, it is.
So it's becoming more and more important.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Now, do you know Chinese too?
Well, a little. I try to learn, but I don't have the time to study. That's my problem. I try to take classes, but then I stop because I have to work and I don't go to the classes. So, you know, I feel like, okay, I'm going to stop and then, you know, retake the classes when I'm more free. But then, well, it happens to me. I mean, the same every time I try to go to classes and to study. I don't have the time. So,
yeah,
it's not like learning English or French. With so you have to go to the classes and then to study at home. If you don't do it, I mean, you're not improving at all.
Right. There's kind of this, a lot of people think that like, oh, you live in another country, like you live in China, you must just automatically learn the language, like you absorb it. Like, nah, it doesn't quite work like that.
Sorry, it's not like this.
No, it's hard. You have to study.
Every time I come back to Spain, it's the same question. I mean, so you know, you have to be a master in Chinese. And I'm like, not really. It doesn't work like this, you know with the Chinese
words. Some of my American friends are like, with languages, they almost think that if you learn another language, any language, then you just know them all, like you're the language person.
So,
I had this friend from Venezuela,
and
when I lived in Wisconsin, and he worked at like he worked for a law firm, and if someone called in and they were speaking like Japanese or Chinese, they would hand the phone to him. And he's from Venezuela. He's no, guys, I speak Spanish.
And that's it.
Spanish and English. I don't speak these other languages.
That's funny.
It's just so uncommon, I think, to speak a second language with any high degree of fluency.
But especially Chinese is a very difficult one. I mean, it is.
Yeah, in many ways, it is.
Yeah, it's not like, I mean, learning another language.
Yeah, the U.S. government lists, like, levels of how hard it is for English speakers to learn a language. Mm-hmm. And so Spanish is a level one. There's a couple, like, French, I think, is level one, and Italian. I think maybe German is number two. Mm-hmm. The highest you can go is five, and Chinese is number five. And that's not even counting the written language. That's only the spoken language.
Only the spoken, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. But in some ways, the grammar is like so simple compared with Spanish.
That's true. And the same, yeah.
I mean, Spanish, you have two ways to say to be.
To be, yeah.
Yeah, which is the most basic verb you can use.
Yeah,
And in English, we only have one.
Yeah, it's true.
So there's two.
I never thought about that, you know? Because, it's my native language, yeah.
Right, That's right.
And
they don't mean the same thing.
They don't mean the same thing.
You have to use the right one.
That's true.
And pick the right one. That was a really difficult one for me when I was learning. Yeah. And then you have two past tenses, too.
Yeah.
And
it's true, yeah. I mean, the grammar is the most difficult part, I think, of Spanish.
Yeah, definitely. So if you want to say I was, then there's like four ways to say it. At least.
Yeah.
And then if you go subjunctive forms, then there's like even more.
Yeah.
So, some of that's hard. But as far as the...
So you prefer the Chinese, right? That's what you are saying.
Well, in some ways, yeah. Because the grammar's easier. There's only one tense in
phonetics?
Chinese.
Come on.
But the getting the tones right is hard.
It's hard.
Hearing them and saying them.
And you can mess up, you know? You have to be sure what are you saying.
Right.
And the way you are saying it, so it's
very important to say it correctly.
Yeah.
But for people who have never like studied it, I think they have this idea that they're going to like say something really offensive if they say it just a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
And usually no. They usually say something that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. That's true.
And I think it depends on who's listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people I talk to in Chinese, they kind of go in their own mind. I can see it. They say, "Oh, this guy's a foreigner. He's not going to pronounce things right. So what he said doesn't make sense, but maybe there's another word that sounds similar that would make sense.
I mean, they made the effort, right? I mean, every time you talk to somebody,
a lot of people do.
I see them like trying to understand what I'm saying, you know?
Yes. A lot
even
of them will try.
Even if I'm not saying it right.
Right.
So, yeah. So.
But some people
really
don't
nice
try, though.
Yep. That's true.
Some people just go, maybe one out of five will just say, nope, foreigner. I don't care if you pronounce everything perfect.
Yeah.
Even if Chinese is your first language.
No,
not listening. You're a foreigner.
That's true.
But that's a small percentage.
Yeah, it is.
I think it's much harder if you're an overseas Chinese, mm-hmm. like what they call Hua Qiao,
mm-hmm.
American-born Chinese, for example,
yeah.
and you come here and you don't speak Chinese. And
wow, that has to be,
Or you don't speak it really well, maybe you speak a basic level, like maybe as well as me, but you look Chinese.
That's true.
And everyone expects you to speak Chinese.
Yeah.
And for me, being not Chinese, I just say hello and people go, whoa, wow, you speak my language. That's so cool. And for them, if they don't speak it perfectly, it's like, hey, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Why don't
what
you?
Happened?
Yeah. Are you dumb? What's wrong?
Yeah. It happens to other people like Malaysians. I have a friend who is from Malaysia. And every time we go out, you know, all the people looks at her, you know, to try to ask her, you know, what are you going to drink? And then they look at her.
She's
like staring at them like, you know, I don't speak Chinese. But she's Malaysian. So he has, you know.
She looks Chinese.
Yeah. So she's like, fuck again.
No. Yeah. And they usually speak very good English, too. It's like. But yeah, it's confusing.
Yeah, it is.
When I go to I've had this happen a lot too. Mm-hmm. Go to a restaurant. If I go with me and my wife Katie, mm-hmm. then the waiter will look at me and like listen and whatever I say. If I bring in a Chinese friend, say the exact same things, the waiter's not even looking at me.
Yeah.
Only looking at my Chinese friend.
Yeah.
Like it's strange.
It happens always.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. But it's just an interesting part of living here.
Yeah, yeah. It is challenging, you know?
Yeah.
Every day.
Well, it's true. Living here every day is its own adventure. And you just walk outside and you've got this whole world of exploration to do and people to talk to. It's just, you never know what's going to happen. Yeah. So you were telling me before when we were setting this up, like mm-hmm. that Netanyahu was in town. I'm kind of curious about this. What do you do with Netanyahu?
Well, you know, part of my job is covering the foreign leaders' visits to China, of course. I mean,
yeah. Well, we're in the capital, so
yeah. So yeah, that's one of the most important things that I do. Hmm. So every time a foreign leader like Netanyahu is coming to China, I have to cover their visits and then, cover every meeting they have here with the Chinese leaders. So Netanyahu was here for 1 week and then he met, all the Chinese leaders, Xi Jinping, Li Keqiang, all of them. And then he also met with Alibaba's CEO.
Jack Ma.
Jack Ma, So yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, every time you know someone like Netanyahu comes here, it's very interesting for us. So we just focus on the visit, and on the outcomes of the visit, of course. Which agreements are they signing, for example?
Sure.
So I have to go to the Great Hall of the People, which is in Tianmen.
All right.
Yeah. So I get to go there.
It's that big, intimidating building.
Yeah.
Scary looking thing.
But it's impressive.
Yeah.
It's really impressive. So yeah, every time I go there, and I film their visits. The welcome ceremony, which is always the same, more or less. And then the signing of the agreements, if they have. And that's it. So Netanyahu was here for 1 week, and I tried to cover the visit as good as I could, because it's very difficult to get information here, as you might know. The Chinese they are not welcome. They don't welcome the foreign journalists here. They try sometimes. but we are not like, you know, very welcome. So
sure.
It's difficult to get information out of those meetings or, you know.
So sometimes you're just getting the basic stuff and high level overview.
Yeah, and you try to get information from the foreign delegation who is coming here, which is, I mean, easier sometimes. In the case of Israel, it's not easy at all. So you have Israel and China, which is like very difficult, you know, us to get information. Yeah.
Okay.
But it depends on who comes. I mean,
sure.
I'm I'm excited thinking about Trump coming here.
Oh yeah, you're ready for it?
Let's see how it goes. Yeah. I don't know. I hope he will come, you know, this year. It seems like Xi Jinping, the Chinese president, is coming to the U.S.
I read that.
He's going on April, I think.
Okay.
So very soon.
We'll see how that
very
goes.
Soon. Yes, and he's going to Florida. But he's not going to play golf, though.
No, not the golf, not the golf course, Mar-a-Lago.
No golf for him. You know, the Chinese are not.
That's true. Yeah, I've never heard of Chinese golf.
Yeah, but you know, it's the new diplomacy. I mean, Trump's golf diplomacy.
Right.
Which is pretty interesting, right? So yeah,
it is interesting. Although Obama played golf all the time too.
Yeah, it's true.
It's just. True.
But he didn't invite Abe, I mean, the Japanese prime minister, to play golf in their, you know, first meeting.
Right. So it wasn't as important with him. Huh?
And it's funny that Trump is inviting these foreign leaders to Florida instead
of
the White House. Yeah. So, I mean, it seems he loves the place.
His own golf course. I'm sure he loves it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to meet him here.
Well, I mean, he loves the media. So,
you know, when who came? I don't remember the Tillerson. Sorry,
Tillerson. Secretary
came
of State.
Like on Secretary of State. He came last week, I think. Last weekend, not this weekend. Last weekend. Uh-huh. He came here, and it was the first visit of a politician from Trump's administration to China. So we were expecting a presser with him and with Foreign Ministry Wang Yi. Mm-hmm. And it was very funny because all the media, we were waiting for, you know, for them to have a press conference or something. Because Tillerson had a press conference in South Korea and in Japan, the two countries he visited first before coming to China.
Yeah.
So this was the last stop of his trip to Asia, right? So we were waiting for them, I mean, to see when was going on, I mean, when they were having this press conference. And at the end, 1 hour in advance, someone just got alerted of a press conference in the Ayutthaya, which is the residence, I mean, it's an official residence for foreign leaders. So, yeah, we had 1 hour to try to get a seat, you know, or to get access to the press briefing.
Oh, you just found out he was coming 1 hour in advance?
No, we just found out that there was a press conference going on at 4 p.m.
Sure.
We knew that he was coming on Saturday, but we didn't know when he was going to, you know, to talk to the media. Or if he was going to talk to the media. So we just knew 1 hour in advance and no one got access. So everyone was, you know, so pissed off because especially, I mean, the American journalists here, because they are used to get access every time, you know, an American guy comes here.
Yeah.
Which is normal, you know.
Right.
And I mean, all of us, we are used to it because with the Obama administration, it was pretty easy.
Yeah.
So this time we were like, you know, everyone was so surprised. Like, okay, so we have a press conference in 1 hour and nobody get access to it. So we were wondering who's going to be, you know, who's going to be there.
Yeah.
And we tried to, Efe tried to cover it, I mean, watching CCTV. I mean, the English channel, which is called now CGTN, right?
Yeah.
They changed the name.
So they just watch TV
So we just watching the TV, I mean, hoping they will broadcast it, you know?
Oh, well, you didn't even know if it was being
broadcast.
We
didn't know, yeah. So yeah, we we hope for it. And then they put like 1 minute of it. And then they stop it.
Oh,
and
wow.
then so everyone was like, oh my God, what is happening? What is he saying? Because, you know, and this was in the middle of the North Korean crisis. Mm-hmm. Of course, everyone was looking at Tillerson, like what he's going to say in China, because he was, I mean, everyone expected to him, I mean, him to be pushing the Chinese side to do more to stop the North Koreans.
Yes.
So, yeah, everyone was expecting to hear something from him. And and I think, I mean, Fox News got access to it. And I don't know who else.
Just
so it
Fox
was
News,
like
huh?
Fox News and, well, ABC, I think.
Huh.
And the Chinese, of course.
So they just let in whoever they want.
Yeah, but it was, you know, like 3, 4, 5 journalists, which is, I mean, you know, very weird. I mean,
And
it's Tillerson and Wang Yi, which is, I mean, the two most important countries in the world. So talking about, you know, foreign issues like, you know, international affairs, like North Korea crisis or...
Which is very important.
Which is very important right now. So, you know, we have to be there. I mean, at least you have to have your own journalist, you know, American journalist. So, yeah, but I don't know if you have read the news, but when he was traveling, he said that he didn't want journalists with him during the trip. To Asia.
Well, too bad, right?
Yeah, so we
comes with the job.
Like, yeah, so you'd quite think. A change, you know, from the former administration.
Boy,
which is,
that sure
I'm
is.
Not saying, I mean, Obama's administration was the best, but at least you have to have, you know, this you have to maintain these standards. I think.
Sure.
I mean, you have to have your journalists. I mean, traveling with you because, I mean, you are talking about. You know,
we need to know what's going on.
Yeah, that's the point. And if you don't have, I mean, especially if you're here in China, you know, we face this kind of situation, which is like the worst situation we could have faced, because we have in one side China, and in the other side, I'm Trump's new, you know, administration. Who are not welcome and the journalists. So this is a. I mean, this is the worst situation for us right now.
Yeah, it's hard to do your job.
Yeah, so we are not getting any information at all from them.
Hmm.
So yeah, it became, I mean, very difficult for us to know what was happening. I mean, luckily the ones who got access to the press briefing. They send the audio thing, I mean, to all of us.
Oh, okay. So you could listen to it at least.
Yeah, we could listen to what he said and write about it, of course.
Yeah.
Because we have to write about it, even if we don't get access to it.
Yeah.
So what's the point? I mean, you are not letting us, you know. I mean, well, I get that their point, of course. I get it, but I mean...
Well,
it's
is it just?
Good. It's not a good thing.
Were the questions just really easy questions because it was only?
I don't know
media?
Because I didn't hear them. I mean, I did after, and no, I mean they weren't easy at all. I mean they were pretty good questions, at least from the American side. I didn't get to listen the Chinese. Because they give one question to the Chinese media and one question to the American media if the politician who is visiting is American, or Spanish media if the guy is Spanish. So yeah, it's one question for, you know, it depends, because sometimes they give more questions, but this is, I mean, weird. I mean, the common thing is one question to the American side, one question to the Chinese side.
Oh, back and forth then?
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. So the American question was pretty good. I mean, like they asked him about North Korea crisis.
Okay.
And of course about Trump's tweet. I mean, last tweet.
Oh, which one?
Of course, because he said, like, well, you know, this new Twitter diplomacy, yeah.
Right.
He just said, like, China should do more to stop the North Koreans,
which was, you know...
probably one of his less controversial tweets, actually.
Yeah, sure, because he said it before Tillerson arrived to China.
Oh,
so Tillerson was flying to China.
Yeah.
So, you know, good timing.
So they're not communicating very well then, huh?
I don't know. Maybe, you know, he doesn't mind at all, and he just said those things, but I don't know if he gets how the Chinese works, you know? Because,
right.
I mean, for the Chinese, this is not good. I mean, this is not good. You cannot say, you know, you cannot say those things before having a meeting with them.
Sure, yeah.
And at least if you want to get something out of the meeting, you know?
Yeah.
So if you are saying, I mean, if you are posting this in Twitter, I mean, hours before Tillerson is meeting with Wang Yi, and you want Tillerson to push the Chinese to do more, you know, to stop the North Koreans, I think this is not the best way to
do it. Could just use the telephone and call Tillerson.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe he thinks this is the good way to do the things with the Chinese. I don't know. I have, with the Taiwan issue when he got the call from the Taiwanese leader. Some experts said that, some American experts said that actually he did good. Because for them, I mean, for some experts, they think that maybe Trump's wanted to, you know, to tell the Chinese, hey, guys, this is a different administration, and I'm not doing the things that Obama has done, which
well,
is okay.
Obama and every other president.
And every other president in 40 years.
Right, right.
Yeah, but I can get this, this way of thinking. But, the way of doing the things, maybe it's not the good one, I mean, the best one to, you know, to get something from the Chinese. I don't know if, because as we have seen in the first conversation between Xi Jinping and Trump, finally, he said yes to the One China policy.
Okay.
So I don't think he got something out of them.
So, right.
Yeah.
So it's all the same, but now it's maybe things are settling down a little
bit. Yeah, and after Trump, you know, admitted that he was going to maintain the policy. So so what's the point, you know?
Right.
I don't know what happened in the middle. They were saying that Xi Jinping was pushing them. I mean, Xi Jinping was saying, I'm not taking any call from him, or I'm not going to talk to him unless he, you know, he says he's going to, you know, to maintain this policy. So, I don't know.
That absolutely
And finally
won't
he did, so...
Okay. So at least there's that. Well, I mean, do you think maybe there's a chance that he didn't know what that was, what the One China policy
no,
was?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he's not that, I mean, that dumb. I think he's pretty smart. I mean, maybe he doesn't think the things twice.
Yeah.
That's true. He just, you
he's
know,
spontaneous.
He thinks something and then he posts it and he doesn't think about what he's doing. Maybe.
Right.
Maybe, but I think he's pretty smart. I mean, he has to be. I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't think he's dumb or he doesn't know what he's doing. Of course he does, but...
I wouldn't say dumb, but I would say maybe not very up on how the world works.
Or experience, you say.
Experience with politics.
Maybe. I mean, of course he doesn't have experience, but he has, I mean, like, very good people around him to, you know, to let him know what is going on. But maybe, you know... he prefers to talk first and then to
that's for sure,
to know
sure.
What's going on. Which is a problem sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Someone needs to take his phone away from him.
Yeah. But I think the things are quite calm right now between, you know, both countries.
Which is good.
US and China. I mean, they have to get along. I mean, they have to do it.
Right.
Because they have common interest.
Of course.
And they are benefiting from each other.
We're giant trade partners.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, whatever Trump says, you know, I think he's speaking to his own public. So, which is normal. Everyone does. I mean, every foreign leader does. When he's talking to the Chinese, he has to know that he's, you know, he's also benefiting from the relationship. So, mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, of course they have differences, and they will have them, of course, on the South China Sea, on North Korea, on, I hope, on human rights. I don't know. I mean, it's going to be pretty interesting for us.
Yeah, it has been already. Yeah. That's one thing that's not going to change. It's going to be interesting forever.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, this the tensions in North Korea seems like the biggest possible issue in the world right now. I mean, as far as disrupting world stability.
Yeah,
So hopefully that stays calm too.
Yeah, let's see what the U.S. does right now with Trump's. I mean, I hope he is thinking twice before doing anything.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the situation right now is very tense. With South Korea, well, right now we have South Korea is in the middle of a huge political crisis.
Yeah, I just saw the president is getting a warrant out for her arrest.
Yeah.
The former president.
Yeah. So they will have a new leader. So let's see how that works, because maybe he or she or whoever.
Did they elect a new leader yet? Or how does that work? Do you know?
I don't think so. I'm not sure because I wasn't following it. But I have to read more about what is happening now because I was so obsessed with Netanyahu and Tillerson here.
Oh, okay. You had other things to think about.
And North Korea that I didn't think about what was happening now. I mean, that's true, yeah. I don't know what is happening now.
Well, it's so weird. Like, the South Korea situation in a normal year, like a couple of years ago, that would have been the biggest news in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, the country, they threw out their leader, that's really big news, and now she's up on charges.
Yeah,
I didn't read
it's
the full article,
big,
but could go to prison.
Yeah, yeah,
and that was their president.
Yeah,
that, and it's one of the biggest economies in the world.
It's true.
It's huge news, but it gets all drowned out by all this Trump
stuff.
Yeah,
but they are so organized that maybe everyone is thinking, okay, they will get rid of her and then put another one. And I don't know how it's going to work, but they are pretty formal in that sense. I mean, they are not like another country who is like more predict. I mean, they are predictable and they know how to do things. So I think, I hope it goes smoothly.
Yeah, it is a highly developed nation.
Yeah, so, but for sure it will have consequences on the North Korean, the policy, right?
Right, whoever comes in.
Of course, on the situation right now. So yeah, let's see, because they are in the middle of this process of installing, deploying the THAAD system. Which is
the missile defense system.
Yeah, this defense system, yeah. Hmm. So, which is another major concern for China. So, the things are...
There's a lot to think about here. A lot could happen in the next few years.
And it's very intense now. But, of course, thinking about the Chinese side, they don't want, a crisis, a big crisis happening there. I mean, they don't want war. At their doorstep,
Oh,
they don't
yeah.
want that.
With North Korea being potentially liberated. Yeah.
No, they have said that so many times. And I hope they do something. I don't know if they are going to do more, but they are trying, I think the Chinese are trying to balance between, because they are allies of North Korea in a way.
For sure,
So they are, they are the only ally North Korea has right now. So, it's a complicated issue.
For sure, very. Have you read The Impossible State by mm-hmm. Victor Cha?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
A long time ago,
a bit older. I think it came out right around when Kim Jong-il died.
I think so. I think so.
What did you think of that?
I really think it was pretty good. I really liked it.
Yeah.
But I don't remember, it was a long time ago. Before coming here, I read it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's been a couple of years for me, too. But I just remember being super informative. And one thing that stuck with me that he said is that North Korea is going to have a really hard time being aggressive, at least too aggressive, because the instant they do, they're done.
Yeah.
We're going to attack. So, but like...
It's true, but the thing is that if they are, a nuclear power, this is getting, difficult to things. I mean, it's getting more and more difficult because... who is attacking first? So,
right.
If you are a nuclear power, I mean, that's if the fear. I mean, the yeah. other countries have.
We can't let that
happen.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, that will be, a major catastrophe. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think that's the main, fear of the other countries. If they are becoming a nuclear power, this is, this is getting the things more difficult. Because you cannot stop them. I mean, maybe you could, but it's difficult, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the thing they are trying to stop, to them to become a nuclear power.
Right. That's an absolute must.
Yeah. So.
Well, but you know what though? Even without it, again, this is all like in the impossible state.
Yeah.
And I've read a few books about North Korea, mm-hmm. but this is the best one I've read that's just about policy and, mm-hmm. and the politics part of it.
Yeah.
They've got thousands of ballistic missiles pointed right at Seoul. And if you look at a map, I mean, Seoul is right there, like very close to the border.
Yeah,
and though even with conventional power, they could kill 100,000 innocent people with the push of a button.
Yeah, they could. Yeah.
Even without the nukes. So I don't know that nukes change things, but...
I mean, they will become more powerful.
A little, so, yeah, all right.
But yeah, they
but does it matter if they can kill a million people or just 100,000?
Yeah.
I mean... It's
true, but imagine, I mean, how would the U.S. respond to this?
I mean, right.
They cannot
allow it.
Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah, and another good thing that he said in that book is that every U.S. president has pretty much had the same policy. I mean, up to Obama.
It's true.
It's true. With North Korea.
And
they
now
haven't really changed.
Trump wants to change it.
Yeah, that's the scary thing, any sort of change there. But it might be necessary, who knows?
Because, they don't believe that the patience diplomacy will work or is working. Hmm. I don't know. I mean, I think it's a complicated issue. And I agree with the Chinese in one thing, because the foreign ministry, he said that the U.S. and South Korea are not helping with these military drills in the area. I mean, of course, they have to defend themselves.
Yeah.
But, the tension is rising, mm-hmm. and it doesn't stop to rise. So
right.
someone has to, I don't know, make an effort. Of course, North Korea has to be first. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they have to do something as well,
Yeah.
So I don't know, or maybe it has to be, it has to be China. But all of them, China, the US, South Korea, North Korea, they have to,
And who are the others? Japan and Russia? I mean, they kind of all have to, they're all involved.
Yeah, they're all involved, yeah.
Whether they like it or not.
Yeah. But the thing that China says is that, at the same time you are pushing North Korea back with the sanctions, you have to talk, to come back to the table, and start to talk. That's the best thing to do, I think, but it's a very difficult one, of course, because the U.S. doesn't want to talk with someone who is, doing this test
now and then, without
stopping to,
And it makes for bad PR too for like our media, just to see the president is talking to them.
Yeah, it's true. And if North Korea doesn't stop to do those things, it's difficult for anyone else to be, to be in the same table.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's a very complicated issue, and I think China has to be there and has to play a role, and a bigger one. That,
sure.
I agree with Trump.
Sure. Well, they share a giant border with the country.
Yeah.
It's in their best interest.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
Well, hopefully things go well. Do you plan to stick around China while it's all playing out? Stay here for a while?
I don't know. I'm planning to stay this year.
Yeah.
But I don't know when I'm going to leave. I've been here for 5 years now. So this is my sixth. And I don't know, time flies here.
You're what? Oh, time flies.
Yeah.
Yes. It's so true.
Yeah. So, yeah, I will try to leave. I don't know when, though.
Do you have plans for where to go?
I don't know. I would love to go to the U.S.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right now, I think it's very interesting to me.
Absolutely.
It will be. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Right.
I'm planning to go to the U.S. or Europe. I will try those, you know.
Sounds good. Yeah, I haven't been home since, like, August.
Really?
It's
been a long time.
Long time. It's a little... It's almost like scary for me, like, do I want to go home when it's all crazy? But I realize it's probably not all crazy there with Trump being president, like in my hometown or something. Mm-hmm. It's probably all the same as it used to be.
Yeah, I think so.
But it's almost like if you've never gone anywhere and you're sitting at home, you might think everywhere else in the world is just like war and chaos and just people killing each other. And it's not really like that.
Yes.
But I'm actually thinking that about back home now. And I'm like, okay, I have to keep reminding myself, no, it's not actually like that.
Yeah. You know?
So it'll be okay. I can go home.
You can enter, right? You can still go in.
Yes. I hope so. I'm a citizen.
Maybe if you come from China.
I know. Well, yeah. I mean, I think I'm still allowed to bring a laptop. Here. Man, I flew, the last time I went home, I flew from Dubai on Emirates Airlines, which is awesome.
It's awesome. I love them.
Their airline is so great. Everything about that airline is great. But now you can't bring a laptop.
Right?
Yeah, there's this new law that if you're flying on Emirates Airlines to the U.S., you're not allowed to bring anything bigger than a cell phone on the plane.
Really?
You have to check your laptop.
Oh my God.
So what happens to it then? These baggage handlers take your
bag? But I didn't know. I mean, what's the point of this?
Oh, it's security.
I mean,
some vague thing with security. It's Trump. I mean, who knows?
It's weird. It's weird.
Yeah, and that's coming from Dubai.
What are you going to do? I mean, like, you know? In a plane with a laptop? I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not so worried about the entertainment thing. Like, it's quite easy to keep yourself entertained on airplanes these days with
no
laptop.
I will worry about that, you know, the laptop being in the plane, I mean, carry with, you know, the luggage or,
right.
You know, if it gets broken or...
Getting broken, that's a big concern.
Yeah.
For sure, anything electronic.
Yeah?
So, yeah, I don't really understand it either.
Wow.
This just happened like a few days ago too. It's another new one.
But if you are flying with American Airlines or
I think American Airlines are it doesn't
fine.
Apply.
Okay.
Which so maybe it's a way to get more business for the US airlines. I mean.
Okay. Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe.
But that's just sad cuz I mean, it's not like Dubai, it's not like Emirates Airlines gave me any like money or anything, but it was just like the best airline experience.
So they are
experience.
Sponsoring your radio. They,
I wish. I will take them if they want.
I will too.
Hey, throw in a free flight
they're
every
great.
Now and then.
Yeah.
They can sponsor my podcast. Sure, I'll talk about them as
I
much as
them,
I want.
I love them, but they are the best.
Yeah.
And Turkish Airlines as well, right? Or Qatar?
I've never flown Qatar.
Wow. No, they are good too.
Yeah.
They are.
Have you been to Qatar?
No.
So when did you fly them or what was your route?
Well, I've been to the airport, but...
Changed planes there.
Yeah,
I went to Dubai for like 3 days.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And how was that?
Well, it's not the kind of place I'd want to live, but it was okay to visit for a couple of days.
Okay.
I mean, there were a couple really bad things going against
it.
Well, not like horrible about Dubai, but about my visit there. One, it was June, and it was 45 degrees Celsius.
Oh, my God.
Which is really, really hot.
It's really
and
hot.
And two, it was Ramadan.
Okay.
So you're not allowed to eat or drink anything
But, I mean, the restaurants are open?
Some of them are open for foreigners.
Okay.
Or for not, I should say for non-Muslims. Mm-hmm. And they'll just put like a curtain over the door or something. But I went there and the guy I was staying with, he wanted me to buy a beer for him because you can only buy it in the easiest place to buy it is in the duty free in the airport. Otherwise, you can only get it in hotels. Fair enough. So he wanted to stock up. So I bought two cases of beer for him, mm-hmm. and I had my backpack. So I was carrying about 100 pounds, so like about 45 kilos between everything I had.
Oh my God.
And I stepped off, and I got off the subway, the metro, and started walking. And I was immediately just sweat. I was getting dehydrated right away because it was just 100% sweat. And I started walking toward his apartment, looking at my phone, Google Maps, and I realized like there's this highway, and Dubai is not a walkable city at all, and you couldn't get across the highway on foot. There's just barriers, so I had to turn around and walk back,
and find
a different way. And I was just stopping every like 5 minutes and trying to find shade, and it's middle of the day. And I went, at one point I said to myself, like, I really need water. I'm going to just collapse if I don't get some water. And I had a liter of water in my pack, but I knew it was Ramadan. And it's illegal to drink water outside during Ramadan.
Oh my God, what did you do?
I found like some shade and I went in a corner and I bent over like a heroin junkie and I took my water and I went like really carefully and made sure no one was looking.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I'm not sure what would have happened if like a cop had seen me. Probably nothing. But you never know.
You never know.
It's in the very least, it's offensive to them.
Yeah.
To see other people drinking water during Ramadan. So.
But me, I mean, if you're a tourist, maybe you don't know. You know.
I could play that card. I could say, "Oh, I'm a dumb tourist." Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
Right.
Stupid.
You know.
Then
I went to a Subway restaurant because mm-hmm. That was the only one I could find that was open. And they said, okay, we'll give you food, but you have to take it to go. You can't eat it here. Or like we'll get shut down if anyone consumes food here. And so, yeah, so I had to take it inside. So, Dubai during Ramadan,
it's not the best option, right?
No.
I have a friend living there. She's working for Zara. I mean, the Spanish stores, clothing stores.
Oh, okay. Well, it's great for shopping.
Yeah.
That's for sure. The malls there are just
amazing. She loves it. Yeah. She loves it. Yeah.
I mean, my first impression there was, like, at the airport was, wow, this place is amazing. I mean, first of all, the immigration guy, just no questions whatsoever. He's just like, okay, you're
in. It's true. I remember.
Nothing. Yeah, no. And it's just like I really like being welcomed into a country and not grilled about what are you doing here.
Yeah.
So that was
great.
Are
you planning an attack on your president?
Yeah,
because
all that
that's
stuff.
The question they asked me when I got to when I went to New York.
Really?
And I was like,
on your president?
On your president?
Oh, on our president. They asked you that.
Yeah.
You ask customs and immigration.
There's a huge form you have to fill, you know? And then they ask you, I mean the most weird questions ever. I mean, because actually, I mean, if you are planning an attack on your president, I mean, on someone's president, you're not going to tell the guy who's...
Probably not.
So it's like, the fuck? I mean, like...
They might not be looking for the words. They might just look at your reaction.
Maybe,
like,
yeah.
Oh, he got me. Oh,
yeah. Sorry, yeah. but it was weird.
But they always ask even me a lot of questions, and I'm a citizen, and I really don't like that.
I mean, they have been, really, you know, concerned about security issues, I mean, always, right?
Okay.
In the U.S., right?
Yeah, yeah.
And in Europe as well. I mean, we have this as well.
Yeah.
We are getting, and right now, especially, you know, with all the attacks.
Yeah.
So they are getting more and more, you know, concerned about security issues.
Fair enough. I know they need to be secure, but they could at least be, you know, somewhat nice.
And polite.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, an Australian friend told me recently, when you're from Australia and you go to Australia, the person there who's taking your passport, I mean, they do their security stuff, whatever. But then they say, welcome home.
Welcome home.
And it's just really nice. It's just like, oh, I've been gone for a while and now I'm home. It's like really nice welcome.
It just happened to me once in Spain.
They said welcome home?
To be welcome, yeah. And to say welcome, yeah. They have to do it more.
Yeah.
I like the Australians.
Yeah, that was great.
I would love to go there, yeah.
Oh, you haven't been there?
No.
Right. When I went there, actually, I didn't even talk to a person. I just scanned my passport in a machine.
Okay.
Gates open and I'm done.
Wow.
Yeah, that's it.
Pretty easy, right?
Yeah, for Americans anyway. It depends on what country you're from, of course.
I think if you're coming from Europe, it's...
You're probably okay, too. Yeah. But we have a special partnership with them. So it just depends. But wow, yeah, Australia is amazing.
Yeah, it
awesome
is.
Awesome country.
Wow, yeah. I'd love to go there. Yeah. I'm planning a trip to India.
Oh, yeah, I was there last summer, too.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
How it was?
Most of it was great.
Okay.
I went there to climb mountains,
and
I didn't end up climbing anything.
Why
my,
not?
My climbing partner, this is so stupid. We took a bus for like 8 hours from Delhi up to a town called Manali in Himachal Pradesh. And he was, my friend was just getting off the bus in the morning to like get our backpacks. He's from India, so he was going to talk to a taxi driver.
Oh, that's cool.
And get the right price, because I'm not from India and they'd raise the prices.
Okay, yeah.
So I just stayed on the bus. And he got off, and as he was getting off the bus, he fell and twisted his ankle and sprained it.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we were going to climb a mountain together.
So you did not.
No.
Okay.
So that part was not good, but and his ankle didn't heal as well as he had hoped. And anyway, I did get to travel more.
How's
than
he doing
I
now?
Oh, he's fine now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just I was only there for like a month or 5 weeks maybe.
Okay. Well, but, 5 weeks. I mean, it's a good trip.
Yeah. I'd love to go back for a long time. I mean, I think you could travel in India for a year if you have the time, at least 6 months.
Yeah.
I just went to the north, up in the Himalayas.
And they said the south is great, right? It's beautiful.
I think so, yeah. I think you have to time it right. You don't want to go during monsoon season. When are you going?
I'm going next month, I think, from
April?
April.
Okay.
From the 15th, I think.
Okay. It'll be hot.
Yeah.
Very, very hot. In the south?
I don't know. I'm thinking, because I just have 10 days, you know.
Oh, okay.
So I'm thinking of going to Delhi, Agra, Varanasi, and Udaipur, I think.
Oh, I didn't go there. Udaipur?
Udaipur. They say it's beautiful. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, well, I'm just thinking about doing this, you know, this trip of 4 cities. But I'm still planning.
So this is a vacation then, not a work
trip?
Yeah,
no, a vacation, okay. Yeah. I need, you know, you need to get out from China sometimes, you know.
For sure.
Time at then. Yeah, but I love to travel inside China as well.
You do?
I think this country is, you know, full of surprises.
For sure.
Yeah, and I really loved like traveling inside China. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite countries to travel in, for sure.
I mean, it's incredible. I would love to go to Xinjiang, because I have never been there.
Uh-huh. Katie and I are hoping to go there.
Oh,
like,
really?
This summer. Yeah. We're still planning it, but we're hoping to get out there.
Yeah.
That's for people who don't
know. They say it's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's like the far west of China, and it's.
The Muslim part.
Yeah. It's not traditionally not a Han Chinese part of China.
Yep.
So there's a lot of Uyghurs there. And, Central Asian heritage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, and not many people.
Not many people, which is good. Yeah.
For China, yeah. I mean, most people in China live in the eastern seaboard or eastern third, let's say, of the country.
Yes.
So out west, not many.
Yeah.
So
and I would love to go to Tibet as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's forbidden for us. So
for journalists?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So
that's out.
I think, yeah, you will have to go and tell me.
Yeah, well, we were going to go.
Oh, really?
We maybe still will, but it's just, it's a little expensive. Because as a foreigner,
you have to go to the, you know, these trip agencies?
Yeah.
Or, yeah?
We're allowed to go as foreigners, but we have to go with a guide. On a tour,
that's
and the tours are pretty expensive. And there are a lot of Tibetan communities outside of Tibet that are still open to
that's
foreigners.
True.
So we might just.
I've been to Yunnan and I've been to Shangri-La.
Oh, yeah, we were just there too.
Yeah.
We have a lot in common with travel.
Huh? I love it.
Yeah, I loved it too, except it was really cold when we were there.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been in during the summer, so.
Oh, okay.
It was cold.
Yeah.
Because, it's high, but yeah. But it was good.
Now imagine December.
Good. Yeah, wow.
It's 3,000 meters above sea level, so I imagine it's never really hot there.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in July. No, it wasn't hot. It was cold, but it was, okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I've been to Sichuan as well, to some parts which are Tibetan as well.
Oh, okay.
So, it was really nice. But I think the best place I've been in China is Zhangjiajie.
Zhangjiajie? Yeah, that's my favorite too.
The Avatar Mountains. Wow, it's incredible.
For sure. I loved it.
It's one of the most amazing things I've seen here. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, they call it the Avatar Mountains because, the movie Avatar had this, I think it was called the Hallelujah Floating Mountains.
Yeah, Hallelujah,
So in the movie, there were mountains like that floated in the sky, and Zhangjiajie kind of looks like
it's almost
that.
The same, huh?
It is.
Yeah.
And they've even named the one peak, the one, or pillar, after the Avatar movie.
After the movie, yeah, it's true.
I loved it there. I went for 4 days. And just stayed in this hostel, like, inside the park.
Okay, me too.
Did you? The HI hostel?
No.
Or a different one?
Okay, no, my hostel wasn't inside of the park. It was just in the...
Just at the base?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But a former Chinese guide of the park was, in charge of the hostel. So it was really nice because every morning he told us, where to go, how many hours should we, go to see that peak or, which was the best one so it was pretty good.
Yeah, did you do a lot of hiking then too?
Yeah, I mean, for 3 days and the fourth one, we were like dead.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, oh my God.
Cool, so you saw a lot of it too then.
Yeah.
I found like there's a lot of people there, at least a fair amount when I was there, even though I think it was November when I went.
Mm-hmm.
But so even though there were kind of a lot of people, they all kind of stayed in the same area, like the main area.
That's
and,
true.
And there's this giant park, and you can hike all over.
It's giant, yeah. I think you could spend, 1 week
for
without,
sure,
passing from the
between
same,
there and Tianmen Mountain.
It was pretty good, yeah.
Have you gone to Huangshan?
Huangshan, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've been there, yeah.
Did you see anything, or was it... they get a lot of clouds there and rain.
But no,
was it okay when you went?
Actually, it was okay. Yeah, it was okay. Mm. I really enjoy it. Yeah.
Okay, so that's another beautiful place. Well, we've been to a lot of the same places.
Yeah, and Inner Mongolia is actually a good place to go as well. Have you been there?
A couple times. Once up in the far north.
Okay.
By, I guess, kind of by the little city of Manjuli.
Okay.
And then around Hohhot and Baotou, that area, the second time. How about you? Where did you go?
I've been to Hohhot. Yeah. And then around the area. I mean, we've been to the desert. I mean, to sleep there.
The Gobi Desert?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I haven't done that. So was that worth it?
I mean, it was totally worth it.
Did you sleep in a yurt?
It was really windy by night.
Yeah?
I mean,
yeah.
Crazy windy.
Did you sleep in a yurt?
In a tent.
In a ger?
In a tent.
Regular tent.
Yeah, okay. Regular tent. And then the next day, we sleep with a family in a yurt.
Okay.
Which is, really nice.
So that blocks the wind better?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was better than being, in the Gobi Desert with, crazy windy. Because the tent almost fell. So we were trying, to... to keep sleeping while the wind was hitting us.
Yeah.
So, it was crazy. It was a crazy night. We didn't sleep at all. But then the next day was better because we went to, the countryside. It was incredible. And to meet this family, living in a yurt there, it was pretty authentic, Because we contacted a Chinese guy who is specialized on foreign groups. Visiting Inner Mongolia, and he's not like the Chinese guide you usually find in China. He was different, and he tried to take us to the nice and authentic places. not what everyone else was at that time. I mean, because we have seen like so many Chinese groups like there visiting the area, but we didn't go to that part where the others were looking at. Okay. So we went with this family. They were like friends of his. So we slept in actually in their own house, you know, because they had two yurts, one for them and one for the, you know.
Oh, that's great.
For friends.
For guests.
Yeah. Yeah, so actually it was pretty good. Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah. I really love it. Yeah.
And do they have a fireplace in the yurt?
Yeah.
And
they did.
Just burn wood?
They did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so. That sounds so, yeah, like such a different way of living.
Yeah. And I also enjoy when I travel to Mongolia, the country.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was there doing the Nadam festival, which is the main holiday for them. It's a major festival.
But what are they celebrating?
I mean, they are celebrating, it's like the national day for them.
Ah, okay.
So they have this big festival with three competitions. I mean, with horse riding.
Oh, of course, yeah.
You know. So, it was pretty cool. I've been there, I mean, for work. I mean, I worked there. I covered the Nadam festival.
Oh, that's cool. So you get to do non-political stuff too.
Yeah, sure. Every time. So it was pretty cool because I didn't know anything about about Mongolia.
Yeah.
And I spent like 4 days there, and I've been to the countryside as well. I covered the horse riding, which was, I mean, really violent, really really violent.
Because, violent? Why?
Because the ones who are riding the horses are kids from around 7 years old.
Oh.
So it's crazy because, they don't have enough protection, I must say, okay?
Like
so
a saddle,
they are not
mean,
wearing, I don't know, a helmet. Or sometimes,
yeah.
I mean, some of them, they are wearing something, but the vast majority of them, they are not wearing anything.
Hmm.
So, and they are going pretty fast. You know, so it's very violent, and when every time they finish, you know, they cross the finish line.
Sure.
The Mongolians, they think that if they touch the horse, they got lucky.
Okay.
So.
Oh, a horse is running past them.
Yeah.
And they're on the ground and touch it.
Yeah. So they try. I mean, I don't know, hundreds of people. They try to touch the horse when the kid comes to the red line. You know.
Yeah.
So it's crazy because imagine, I mean, the kid is trying to stop the horse, you know, to so they try to approach him and then to touch the horse. So the police came,
yeah,
and they tried, you know, to separate them. I mean, from, because, you know, if you are trying to touch the horse, maybe you are, and I don't know, the kid maybe might fall or something.
Yeah,
so
the horse could kick. I mean, a lot of things could happen.
It's a really violent and crazy scene every time the, you know, descends. So so actually I was there and I got robbed because someone took my mobile phone while I was filming this part of the race. Oh my God, it was crazy. And I just thought, okay, what is happening?
Yeah.
And then so many foreigners got robbed that day.
Oh no.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of violent, but at the same time, it's like super exciting because it's like really different out of what you see.
It's
in
an
other
way
parts.
Of life.
Yeah.
Do you think they really live like that, like on horses?
They do. They do. They still last. No, I mean, they still do. They still do.
It's awesome.
I visited a Mongolian family, an elder family, who was living in the countryside. And they still live like this. I mean, Mongolia is the last country who still have nomads, right?
Not like quite so civilized.
Yeah.
Huh.
But it's beautiful the way they live. In a way, I mean, for me, it would be like super hard, really hard to be like this. I mean, to live like this, but it's beautiful. I mean, they are, you know, in connection with the natural life, or you know, the animals and all.
Yeah, I just saw, I saw a movie recently when I was in Yunnan about Mongolians. Mm-hmm. But it was a beautiful movie. It just followed one family and like the two kids and the dad and the mom, and they were moving for the season. I think they move two or three times a year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do.
And when I say move, I mean pick up everything and move
it.
All of their
the
possessions.
Tent or the yurt or
the yurt. Yeah. So they were in a yurt, and I think this was not a documentary. It was kind of strange. I think it was fiction. They were clearly actually Mongolian, and it was clearly in Mongolia, so it might as well have been fully real. But it just kind of followed them. There wasn't a lot of dialogue, just a little bit, but it just kind of showed their lifestyle, and it was just really beautifully done. I can't remember the name now, though.
It's really beautiful.
I'll have to
put
a link to it.
I mean, I suggest you to go during the Nadam Festival.
And when does that happen?
It's in July.
July.
Yeah.
We'll be at home in July.
Really?
That's bad.
A pity.
Yeah.
But it's really exciting, and you get to know their way of life, and they are partying, of course, and dancing, and you know, eating. I mean, it's very beautiful, and I really love it.
Huh.
I really love it.
Next
and you don't
time,
have
maybe.
Any pollution, or at least I didn't have during that time, you know?
Yeah.
Because if you're going in winter time, I mean, it's very polluted.
I've heard in Ulaanbaatar it can get really bad.
Yeah, it's one of the worst cities in terms of quality air.
Is that just because of the heating?
I think it's the heating and... No, I think it's because of the heating, yeah.
Hmm.
And
well, that's too bad. Have you ever heard of Dan Carlin and Hardcore History?
No.
Oh, I'll have to show you this when we're done. But it's another podcast.
Okay.
And this guy, he's like used to be on the radio, and now he just does a couple different podcasts. But one of them is all about history, and he's really, really into the Mongolians. And so
really?
He did a series about Mongolia, or about Genghis Khan,
mm-hmm.
and that era.
Wow.
And I mean, it just got me really interested in Mongolia because he's so good at telling a story and talking about how this guy came to power and basically took over all of Asia. I mean,
it's amazing.
Knocking on the door
of
Europe.
You know, there's a really good series. I think Netflix produced it. I don't know if Netflix or other... I don't remember the name, but it's about Mongolia, and it's very good, very good.
Okay, I'll have to look
check
that up
the name.
Too.
Yeah,
about modern Mongolia, or
no. I mean the Genghis Khan
era.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to watch that for sure.
Wow, no, it's really good. It's really good.
Those guys, the nomadic people, they're just like a different breed of people. Like
And it's amazing to see them now, you know, when you go there and you see them and you actually see them living like that.
Sure.
It's like, wow, you know,
cool.
Being a nomad,
yeah.
In this century, it's like, wow.
For sure.
It's very impressive, very impressive.
It's not much of that left in the world.
Yeah.
But speaking of that, I just saw the movie version of a book called The Lost City of Z,
mm-hmm.
or Lost City of Zed, is coming out like right around now. You've heard of this?
I heard this, yeah.
Because I read the book a few years ago and
really
how liked
it.
Oh, it was awesome. It was so good. Just a lot of adventure. The book's about a guy named Percy Fawcett.
Okay.
And he was a British colonel, and he was convinced that there was this ancient city within the jungle in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone kind of told him, like, nah, big cities in the jungle, it's just not possible. Because once you get to a certain size, like, disease takes over, and you can't grow food. And these people are hunters and gatherers, and it just wouldn't work out ever. And a bunch of people were trying to search for it. I mean, you've heard of El Dorado, right?
Mm-hmm,
I mean, so a lot of people have tried to find El Dorado, and... Mm-hmm. Percy Fawcett thought maybe this is El Dorado, this legendary city. And so he went searching for it. And at one point he went in and the whole world was watching. This is like 100 years ago,
mm-hmm.
or a little less. And he went into the jungle and vanished. And no one heard from him again. And so there was all this speculation like, oh, the natives have captured him. Or maybe he's like living a really good life there and doesn't want to talk anymore to the outside world. So someone went to try to find him mm-hmm. and got killed. And then someone else went to try and find him and got, like, lost and never found again. And like, 50 people have gone into the jungle looking for this guy and died. And so this author, I think his name is Charles Mann. I'll have to look this up. But he's a writer from New York, and he's not in very good shape and not particularly outdoorsy. But he got kind of caught up in the mystery of the lost city of Z. And he decided to go try to find Percy Fawcett. And so he went into the jungle. Mm-hmm. This was just a few years ago then, 21st century. And so it's about his story. And then he writes the book kind of back and forth between his modern story and then the original Colonel.
Wow.
And so there's a movie coming out, or maybe it's just came out. I'm not sure.
I don't know. But I have heard about the movie.
Oh, okay. I literally just saw the preview before we started talking.
Okay.
I'm like, oh, wow, I have to see that.
Yeah. Huh.
But it's just another one of these places where you know, there's...
I guess they will do a story on the Malaysian flight.
Oh, the one that disappeared?
Yeah.
You're going to do one, or
I guess someone will.
Oh, someone!
Will do a movie.
Ooh, yeah. Did they ever figure out what happened to that plane?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. We covered it from here. I mean, we spoke to the families, the Chinese families who lost someone in the flight.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because when you know that. 153 Chinese were on board. So when it disappeared, they didn't know what to do. So they spent like a month, I think. I remember it was a month in a hotel here close to the airport.
In Beijing?
Yeah, in Beijing. Uh-huh. I mean, asking for an answer, of course. Uh-huh. Asking for, you know.
Right. Where did that flight start from?
Kuala Lumpur.
Oh, okay.
It departed from Kuala Lumpur, and it had to arrive to Beijing, but never
did.
Oh,
it was coming to Beijing?
Yeah,
it was coming to Beijing, mostly
but
Chinese
never did.
Were on it.
So, yeah, okay. 153, I think, Chinese.
Wow.
Yeah. So they are still fighting for, you know, to get an answer, but poor people. I mean, like, this is one of the most sad stories I've covered in my life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, you know, every year... I'm in contact with them, and every year I try to, you know, to write something at least on the anniversary, because, you know, the media are not interested on that anymore. I mean, talking about the media, I'm talking about the, you know, the editors, or, you know, the ones who decide.
Unless you find something, right?
Yeah. So yeah, they think, okay, it's been like how many years, you know, it disappeared in 2014.
Yeah.
So we are in
3 years. Huh?
Yeah. So yeah, the interest is slow right now for the, you know, the media. So yeah, we try to do something every March, because the plane disappeared on the 8th of March in 2014.
Oh, so we just passed that date.
Okay. Yeah.
So what did you do then this year?
So, well, I talked to them, and you know, I kept on like writing the same things, because you know, it's the same. I mean, they don't know what to do. They don't know what happened. They want, you know, their families back, or their, you know, their loved ones back. But it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult because, like, I guess when something happens, I mean, or something happened to your, you know, to your loved ones, even if it's an accident, or, you know, I mean, at least you know what happened.
Yeah.
You know what happened, but when you don't know anything, what happened to them, it's very frustrating, because you are. I mean, they keep thinking that they are still alive, which is like incredible.
They
time they told me this was, you know, when they just knew about the incident, right? So, well, at the very first moment, okay, it's a normal reaction, you know, to say, well, they are still alive.
Yeah.
They're, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know, the plane went to another place, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, it got hijacked. I mean, everyone was speculating about this. So, well, they said that at the very first moment, they said they are alive. The mobile phones are ringing, they are alive. Mm-hmm. So they were sticking to that idea, okay? But after the years, they keep on thinking about that, you know?
Yeah.
I think they try to, you know, to have, you know, a proper answer. And
they want the closure.
Yeah. So
haven't gotten it.
I mean, it's difficult for them. And you see them, like, thinking about or reading about these millions of theories about what happened.
Yeah.
And they believe in those theories.
Okay.
Which is normal. I mean, because you don't have nothing. I mean, so
they only have hope.
Have nothing.
So
yeah.
That's all there is.
So yeah. But it's a sad story. It's a sad story.
Very sad. I mean, it's crazy to think that an airplane in the modern era could just disappear.
Yeah.
Too.
That's
it's just not something
that's
we have.
That's the thing. I mean, and that's why they are angry. You know, at the same time, because they are saying, how the hell this happened?
Mm-hmm.
We know, I mean, we are in the 21st century. How can you lose a plane right now? How can you do it? I mean, like, it's
right,
it's
but what
incredible.
Are we supposed to do? I mean, it's like we've looked, people have looked for it for years.
That's true, and, that's true.
You know.
But, well, they think that someone is hiding information.
Oh, okay.
Which might be true, I don't know,
well,
you know, but... I don't know, but I mean, at the same time, we know that some parts of the plane have been found in the Reunion Island.
They did in Reunion?
Yeah. So yeah, I mean...
I'm just trying to picture where that is. That's nowhere near Malaysia.
It's not. So, I mean, they have found some parts of the plane.
That's weird.
So, I mean, all is pointing at at the theory that the plane just crashed in the middle of the Pacific or so.
Well, that'll be a big story if they find it. I mean, that'll be huge.
Well, not the Pacific, the Indian Ocean.
I guess that would be Indian Ocean, right?
Indian
if it's
Ocean,
Reunion,
yeah.
Yeah, it's so, trying to think of the geography there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but. But yeah, poor them, yeah.
For sure.
At the same time, I think the best thing I've covered here is Umbrella Revolution.
Oh, okay. In Hong Kong.
Yeah, in Hong Kong, yeah.
This glass is just rattling a little
bit.
No big deal. Yeah, so did you go to Hong Kong?
Yeah, I did go, yeah.
Okay, and how was that?
It was exciting. I mean, to see so many people so young talking about democracy, you know? Like when I first arrived there, well, I went out to the streets, of course, to talk to the people. And I found, you know, like kids of 12 years old, 13 years old, like talking about, you know, I want democracy and I want to vote our next leader, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh my God, how old are you? And they were so young. And every day, you know, I kept like finding people, I mean, meeting people so differently. I mean, like from all ages, from all, you know, all ways of life. I mean, like students and workers and, I mean, everyone was involved at that time.
And did you get, like, personal stories? Is that kind of your main reason for being there?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's a lot of angles you could take.
Yeah. No, I try to focus. Of course, I mean, as a news agency, you have to think about, writing a piece on what's happening. I mean, the developments. I mean,
sure.
Like, what happened today, blah, blah, blah. But then you have to have time to, you know, to talk to the people and to get good stories of them. So I did one story on a painter who was calling himself the revolutionary painter and who spent all this first week of the protest painting what he was seeing. Because he wanted them, you know, to be remembered.
Yeah.
So he was just, you know, spending all day.
He'd sit out on the street
in
with
the
his
same
paintbrush.
Spot. Yeah.
Watch the protests.
Yeah, watch the protests and then painting what he was seeing at that time. I mean, and that was what he was doing. So it was like, you know, like, wow, you know.
Yeah, it's cool. It's like an older art form, but it can be powerful.
Yeah. So, yeah. It was really, really cool, like covering a thing like that, because, you know, it was really impressive, really impressive, because they were, I mean, all over the city. I mean, they were blocking, I mean, long and big avenues, you know, in front of the government buildings, and they were so organized and so clean. I mean,
no violence or anything.
No violence. Yeah. I mean, they were so, you know, so calm, and they were helping you. I mean, they were, you know, offering you like water.
Oh, they
or
knew you were
food.
A journalist. And
yeah, well, I mean, there. Every time they saw me with the camera, and okay. So yeah, they were. I mean, but not only me, but all the people. I mean, if they see you, I mean, if you are a foreigner, they will offer you, you know, something, and they will try to explain to you what was happening.
Okay.
Which was amazing for me. I mean, like every time they, you know, they see they saw a foreigner, they try to approach to him and then to explain to him what was happening and why they were doing what they've done. So yeah, it was like, I mean, their attitude really impressed me. Like I don't know. At the same time, they were so clean, which was, I mean, because imagine they were like sleeping in the streets.
Yeah.
So spending all day in the streets. Imagine like eating. I don't know.
Yeah, not very sanitary conditions.
Yeah. So they implemented the system of trying to take all the garbage and throw it out and you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
I guess you'd have to have some garbage pickup
and they have I don't
bathrooms?
Know. Emergency bathrooms as well. So they opened like emergency spots for the people who was, you know, tired or who wanted to talk to someone because they think they weren't sure about what they were doing. Yeah. So you had their like psychologist or, you know,
it's an organized protest.
Yeah, like doctors or I don't know. I mean, crazy, totally crazy. I mean, it was like, oh my God. When you know, it was really, really impressive. Really impressive. So so yeah, and and they were given like free food for the ones who, you know, who couldn't buy for free food. They were also having like lessons of imagine if you were a student and you can go to the to your high school or to the university to take your classes. You can, you know, do your homework with a teacher. And so they opened this, they implemented like this kind of spots where the people could study
That's
with a
crazy,
teacher
huh?
or, you know,
so like
history,
going to school while
history
protesting.
Spot. They call it like this, like history spot. So you could study with them. I mean, so if you need help, you can go to a teacher who was also protesting, of course. You know,
so they're all in on it together. So
yeah.
Wow, so they're trying to like kind of live their lives like they normally would.
Yeah.
While protesting.
While protesting.
I guess
yeah.
How long did that go on?
3 months.
Oh, so long that you almost have to have.
That's
some
the only way. That's the only
you
way
have to
do it. And you know, they are so polite that they don't want to, you know, to bother anyone.
Yeah.
So that's the point. I mean, because they were, I mean, when I was there and I was trying to, you know, I wrote a piece on how they clean they were, you know, or how well organized, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
And I was talking to them like, why did you do, I mean, all this stuff? I mean, you know, you talk to the teacher of, you know, of the high school to come here and to spend like 2 hours teaching the kids, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, you know, we don't want to bother anyone. So we want to, you know, to have this in a normal and organized way and in order to, you know, to help others and to do this, you know, nicely, which was like, okay, you know, wow. So, yeah, and I think that's why, I mean, they spent like 3 months in the streets. Because literally, I mean, they were living there. So
really impressive. Wow.
So, yeah. Wow. And for me, it was, you know, such a good moment. Yeah.
Sounds like an awesome time. How long were you there for?
I mean, it's been like 5 days because I wonder when it first started, because as you know, I mean, they started in the middle of this holiday, big holiday here. This is the first week, Golden Week in China, in October. So we also have holidays. But one of the us has to be like working. And, you know, as a new CNC, we have to have one person working every time.
Yeah.
So that was my case. And at that time, well, my boss, well, a new boss came to my office. So he was also working. But I think during the weekend, I've traveled to somewhere. I didn't remember where. And I didn't know about what was happening in Hong Kong. I didn't work during the weekend. So when I first come to the office that morning on Monday, my boss was telling me, wow, something big is happening in Hong Kong. But we didn't know. It was like 2 days before they were kind of protesting. But they are used to protest. I mean, the Hong Kongers, I mean, like, they know how to do it and they do it a lot. So it wasn't the first time. So my boss was telling me, no, but I think this is big. So I don't know. And he was like thinking, because we have a correspondent there in Hong Kong. Uh-huh. We have a colleague working in Hong Kong, another one in Taiwan, and another one in Shanghai. So, but at that time, the correspondent in Hong Kong, our colleague, she was on holidays. She was in Thailand. So we didn't know what was happening, you know, on the field.
Right.
So we were like thinking, okay, and I said, why don't we go? We have to go. I mean, if you think this is big, I mean, we should go. But I didn't know anything. I was like, okay. So yeah, my boss was like, okay, go home, take your stuff and go to the airport. I will, you know, buy you a ticket. Hmm. And I was, okay.
Great, yeah.
And I ran because he said to me, and you know, you have to write a story today. So you might get there, you know, soon enough to talk to the people and to write the story. So I had this deadline, you know,
that's
crazy deadline.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, so I, you know, I took my bike, I went home and I took, you know, whatever I I think it was useless to, I mean, useful to be there. So yeah, I took my things and I went to the airport. And then I started, you know, like reading the things and before getting on board. And then during the flight, I was reading all the things that happened in the weekend, during the weekend.
Yeah.
So yeah, when I would get there, you know, I went to the hotel, but it was really difficult because they have already blocked so many avenues. So it was difficult to me to get to the hotel. And I contact another colleague from another media outlet.
Yeah.
And she helped me and she said to me, go to this hotel. And this is a nice one, you know, the most, I mean, the best one to be close to the protest. So yes, I've been there and, you know, I left my luggage and I went right there to the, you know, to the streets, I mean, to talk to the people.
Just try to find random people to talk to?
Random people and to talk to, and to, you know, to ask them what was going on, in order to write something, you know, and I went there with my camera and I had to film, you know, because...
So you do it all?
I do it all, as a multimedia journalist, you have to do it all. I mean, it's not the best thing to do, but sometimes the job requires it, right?
Sure.
So, yeah, I had to film, I have to, you know, interview people, and then I remember a Latin America radio station called me to be on live in 1 hour. Like,
oh, wow, okay.
Like, okay, and we are used to it. I mean, we have to go live for radio stations from Latin America from
Makes
time
sense.
To time.
Yeah, yeah.
But sometimes you have to, you know, to write the news and to send it, to send the footage you have filmed, and then go live with the radio station. So I had to know.
Oh,
to
they
time.
Need stock or background footage while you're talking.
So,
okay,
so
got
I was
it.
Like, okay, give me more time, you know, like 1 hour more, please. And they said to me, yeah, sure. And I remember I went online at 3 a.m. in the morning, more or less.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And they were like, good afternoon, good morning. I don't remember. And I was like, okay, good morning.
Whatever
like
it is 3 there.
3 a.m. Yeah. And the first thing they asked me was like, if the Chinese government was going to, you know, to deploy the tanks in Hong Kong. So I was like, what? I mean, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. I've been here one day, though. But yeah. But they were like, I think everyone was, looking at Hong Kong at that time. And it was crazy. I mean, work-wise, it was crazy for me. I didn't sleep, 2 hours per day, more or less. It was crazy. It was crazy. Because everyone was like, and we are the major news agency in Spanish. Latin American media doesn't have many correspondents here in China. So, they pick up our stories.
Okay.
So that's a problem if you are alone, covering this issue.
That's a lot of work for you. Wow.
Yeah, because they want you to do so many things, which is good, of course. But sometimes you get, so many requests. At that time, different radio stations from different countries, they want me to go live. But I didn't have the time. So I was like, I can do it all,
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it was, worldwide, it was crazy. But, it was pretty fun and very interesting. Yeah, huh. I really loved it.
Yeah, you've got quite the life.
Yeah.
All this travel and,
But, it's not sometimes like, it's not always like this.
Oh, okay. Just, well, I guess you couldn't do that forever, right? Like 2 hours of sleep a night.
No, of course not. Mm. And then my colleague, the one who is based in Hong Kong, she arrived.
Oh, did they say, get back here, we need
you? More or less, yeah. But when I arrived there, they told her, it's okay, Tamara is there, so you could, finish your holidays and then come back. And then she came back after 5 days, I think, 4 or 5 days. Mm. And then, she started to work 3 months. another colleague of mine, he went there to help her after the first month because it was impossible, for her to be, every day, working that hard.
Sure. Did you go back again then later,
no,
too?
No, I didn't.
Just the one time.
Yeah, just one time,
So it sounds like you really enjoyed it, but I guess the downside is, is anything going to change? It just kind of seemed to end.
This past weekend we had the election of the new executive, the new government, the new leader of the government, and it wasn't an election, of course. It was kind of a selection because a committee of 2,000 people, around 2,000 people, they selected the new leader of Hong Kong. Which was the main reason why the Hong Kongers were protesting at the time. They wanted to vote for the next leader of Hong Kong. So I think this past weekend was a sad one for them because they saw that they didn't accomplish anything.
Yeah.
Talking about democracy, and so they didn't have the chance to vote for the next leader, but I don't know. I've been talking this week with the leaders of the movement in 2014. Some of them are now in the parliament they created a new party, like Nathan Law is one of them, and he got elected as a legislator, so he's now in the parliament, which is good. So for them, they changed something. They said the people now think more about, democracy and about their rights. In that sense, they think they had a change. They did something. They accomplished something.
Something good came of it.
Yeah, the sad part is what we saw this weekend. They didn't have elections. Not that as we understand
right.
the elections,
yes.
right? So yeah. Well, I don't know. We will have to to wait and see what happens. Yeah. Mm. But I think they are not stopping. They are still fighting, and they will do it. They will do it. So yeah. I don't know.
Well, they've got a while still, right, before the countries merge together.
Yeah.
How long? When? What year does that happen?
When
Hong Kong becomes part of China, completely part of China.
When that happened?
Yes.
In 1997. So this July, it's the 20th anniversary.
And I think they had a 50-year contract where there's two systems still?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay,
that's
so true. So it'd be 40.
I don't know if it was 50 years contract.
Oh, that's what I'm curious
remember.
About. Well, I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
But there's this
kind of... Yeah, but the anniversary this summer, I mean, it's going to be a big thing because they are planning a big protest. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Huh. Yeah. I wonder if there will be a big celebration in Beijing.
I don't know. I think it seems that the Chinese president, Xi Jinping, is going there for the, you know, for the celebration.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, and it will be the first time that Xi Jinping goes to Hong Kong.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Well, we'll see. He'll be there.
Because I'm not sure if he's going to like, you know, having the people out in the streets, like, you know, mm-hmm. trying to, you know, to fight for democracy while he's there. Hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, he has a really complicated situation in Hong Kong, and I think it's not getting better. So yeah, I don't know what are they going to do with that.
It's like, just for me, it's so fascinating just being in China right now, and just in Asia, there's just so much happening all the time, all these giant stories.
I think China is the place to be right now.
Yeah, it is, totally. It's almost a little sad that we're leaving so soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for you, it's like even another level beyond, because you're actually covering this stuff.
It's very interesting. But even though that, some journalists, they don't want to come here.
Right.
It's, it amazed me. I mean,
yeah, I would think this is what you'd be. This is like the place you want to be in that kind of career.
I kind of get that for a lot of people, they still think China is, you know, the Far East. Mm-hmm. So they think China, China, you know, it's another planet for them. So. They still think like that, which is true. I mean, this
is
really different.
It
is. Yeah, it is. It is. And I mean, if you are a journalist, this is not an easy country. Of course, it's not.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's difficult, but come on. I mean, if you think, I mean, globally, this is becoming more and more important. So if you are here, you know, you are covering those kind of issues. I mean, you are covering, I mean, I think I've met, I mean, all the foreign leaders, I mean, here, because everyone
wants to meet them.
Yeah, I mean, meet them. I mean, cover their visits, but I'm with them in the, I mean, every time they meet Xi Jinping, I'm there, I mean, with the, you know, with the camera, or, you know, or I'll go, I mean, I get access to the meetings, but also the press conferences. So, you know, if you are here, I mean, you are in the, you know, in the top.
You're right in the center of the universe, basically.
So I think for, you know, from a journalist perspective, I don't get the people who say, you know, it's China.
Yeah,
it's,
I don't either.
But I guess it's difficult, of course. It is. I mean, it's difficult to live here or to work here, because living here is, I think it's not that difficult. Because, I mean, everything is very cheap. Except the apartments.
Rent in Beijing is really high.
But apart from this, I mean, it's very easy. I mean, to live
culturally,
here.
Though, it's. I think a lot of foreigners in general. Forget about journalists for now. Just foreigners, Americans, whoever, don't want to come to China because they have their own like vision of what it looks like.
That's true.
They just think it's not a good place. But like for me, it's great living here.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I mean, there's difficulties for sure.
Of course.
It is a very different culture.
Yeah. But I mean, it is. But I don't know. But if you're young,
especially if you're young, you've got the energy for it.
Why not coming here? You know, to see that part of the world. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I understand the people that want to, you know, to go to somewhere else. the US, Europe, Latin America, for a lot of Spanish people. It's good. So I mean, I get it. But if you are a journalist, I mean, I have, you know, I don't get it. Because, I mean, you have to be interested in what's happening here to understand what's happening globally, you know? Yeah. Especially if you are working on international affairs. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but it happens. It still happens. I mean, if you ask somebody, I mean, to come here, even if he or she is a journalist, maybe they will say no. Because it's
Turn
far,
it down.
And, you know, it's far, it's different, it's another planet. Yeah. Which it is.
So listen to Tamara and come to China.
Yeah, come here.
All right.
You're welcome.
Well, we should wrap this up, Tamara. It's been an awesome discussion.
Thanks so much.
If people want to like see you online, all the stories you're doing, what you're covering, do you have a specific place they can go?
No, but I think they can look for my name in Google.
Okay.
Like a simple Google research.
Okay.
But they can put Tamara Gil, which is my surname.
Gil. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And Efe, which is the name of my agency, EFE.
Okay.
And they will see
me. All right, and I'll put up a link
stories.
To that and on my website too. And
okay.
I'll have to keep in touch with you and like follow you online and all these cool stories.
Thanks so much.
All right, thanks for coming on. It's been awesome.
Yeah, I did.
Thanks again to my guest, Tamara Gil, for coming on the show. And thanks for listening. My website is 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number, 1000daysbetween.com. And from there, you can click on the link to the show, and I'm going to put up some pictures from some of the stuff we talked about and a few links to Tamara's stories. Thanks for checking it all out, and we'll see you next time.